Hey, good evening. This is Shelley Owens, the mayor from City Council and Gazebo City Council. It's 7 o'clock, and I'd like to call the January 16th, 2024 general meeting to order.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Here.
Councilmember Patrick?
Here.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Present.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Here.
Councilmember Bishop?
Here.
Councilmember Taylor?
Here.
Mayor Owens?
Here.
All are present. A quorum.
Okay. And Janine, could you give us the vision statement?
We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources, with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Okay, thank you. And before starting the meeting, we'd like you to mute your phones and keep the video off. The meeting will be recorded and posted to our website, and the packet will be projected during the meeting and is also available at cms.gustavus-ak.gov. The first action is approval of the December 11th, 2023 general meeting minutes. Council Member Rachel.
I move to approve by unanimous consent the December 11th, 2023 general meeting minutes.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, let's see. I guess we had Kyle first. Okay, it is moved by Rachel and seconded by Kyle to move to approve by unanimous consent the December 11th, 2023 general meeting minutes. The minutes have been previously distributed. Do any members of the public wish to offer any additions or corrections to the minutes? No members. Okay. Do any council members wish to make any additions or corrections to the minutes? Okay. Are there any objections to approving by unanimous consent the December 11th, 2023 general meeting minutes? Hearing none, the motion is passed by unanimous consent. At this point, I'll ask if anyone, are there any requests from the council for agenda changes? Okay, no hands raised, no one requesting. Are there any objections to adopting the agenda by unanimous consent? Okay, hearing no objections, the agenda is set by unanimous consent. We will begin with the committee reports and staff reports, and we'll call you in the order listed. Please state your name, department, and try to keep the reports to 5 minutes or less. The first opportunity is for the Gustavus Volunteer Fire Department quarterly report. Chief Sol Martinez, if you could come join us up here.
All right, good evening, everyone. So yeah, like a lot of the fall and winter here is in the training aspect. One thing I'd like to welcome Leah Oaken. I know a lot of you, it's a bit of old news, but this is kind of how the 3 month quarter report works as EMS coordinator. So she's been basically, I'm sure she'll as you see her report maybe, and she will probably come up and press it, but she's been leading the charge of cleaning the fire hall and stuff that I've been doing a great job. The next thing, one kind of big thing, we did hire a contract with Lexipool to write a grant for the AFG application to hopefully purchase a new water tender to replace our tanker two, which is the one that's currently sitting outside. Hopefully we'll get a better one and be more along the lines of the NFPA regulations, or not regulations, the NFPA guidelines. The one, like kind of the large training after the EMS, sorry, after the fire conference we went to was the EMS symposium that was up in Anchorage. This is something that's been going on for every year. It's always been in Anchorage, I think, exception for COVID. And I don't think we have sent any volunteers in quite a while. So we were able to get some funding for that. And There was, I was able to attend 18 of the classes. There's definitely a lot more classes in the fire conference, and it went from a airway talk to a to just references that you can use for training and or leading a department. One of which was a kind of a trove lead workshop, is how to get a general understanding of how to read a trove lead. And in the speaker's point of view, at least, reason why EMT1 and above should be able to officially read EKGs, because as of right now, I believe the only ones you can read EKGs the EMT3 or AMT above or above. But as an EMT1, you can place it, you just can't officially read it. The other classes kind of large lines of a psychological trauma in EMS patients. It's kind of a large way of how to talk to people who experience some form of mental traumas to try to get away from experiencing PTSD some form of mental trauma in the future, and try to get them get the help a little sooner through us, and then hopefully get the better help, continue the help afterwards. There's stuff like car wrecks and trauma accidents, stuff like that. So other things with mostly with Leah and I, we're working on with trying to get our 911 system changed a little bit. Right now, I can start to see reason why it hasn't been changed. The as of right now, if you call 911 on the cell phone, it's going to call the troopers. And right now, we are trying to change it for to basically call directly to us. But in order for us to do that, we had to create a digital map, essentially, of our area. And because it's never been done, it's pretty much being done by scratch. Because right now, as we found out over the Christmas period, if they just switched over, and we were getting Angoon and Yakutat 911 calls. And so we end up just switching it back to going to troopers. So we're hopefully to get that resolved. But it's been a fairly slow process, and not because of any of what we're doing. It's just the 911 quarter switched, got left her job, and someone new now too. So that didn't help. other things that have been kind of come up, people have been asking about Wi-Fi calling. Tell you the truth, I have no clue what's how to set up Wi-Fi calling with our, because of our, how our addresses work. It's not really in a computer system, and their phones just doesn't recognize it. And because I haven't found any address that works, post office address doesn't work. I know a lot of people use that 123 Postmark Drive. Other people use it. I have some people use it. I did set it up, but I would not recommend my way. I have a Juneau address in mind, so I don't would not recommend it. if you haven't already, COVID testing has ended. It actually ended in October. Just forgot to mention in the last quarter report. Unfortunately, we're not providing any free COVID tests in the fire department anymore, or paid ones at all. So other than that, hope everyone had a safe, happy new year. One thing we did end with 50 EMS calls and 2 fire calls. Hopefully everyone has a safe holiday season and continues to be safe and drive safe out there. It's getting a little icy. So, yeah.
Thank you, Chief Martinez. Are any council members want to ask clarifying questions? Okay, I don't see any hands up. Okay, thank you. And next up is EMS coordinator Leah McGowan.
Thank you, members of the council. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So I took this, and this is, for the record, this is Leah Okin, and I'm discussing the EMS coordinator position. I took this position on about 3 months ago, and there were quite a few items on the list of duties, and I narrowed it down to three priority objectives. And my goal for the 3 months was to try and accomplish these three objectives. And the three objectives were to increase the number of responders, work on drills and training to ensure the readiness of the responders, and inventory supplies to ensure out-of-date supplies were disposed of correctly and current supplies are in adequate supply and on hand. So I was thinking it was only three items and I should be able to accomplish this in 3 months. However, those three items that took me are still taking me a lot longer than I had anticipated. So I haven't accomplished them. They're still in process. Obviously, the drills and the training, that's ongoing anyway. And also, so is increasing number of responders. Probably the item that's taking the longest time is going through every single supply that we have and every single box and every single item to inventory. Every single item takes a while. But I think it's an important aspect to do so that we can ensure that we don't have expired items and that we know what we've got and what we need to order and just get an idea of accountability of how much supplies we go through, and so that we don't order too much and we order the right amount and we have the right amount on hand. And so just try and get an understanding of supplies needs and demand. So on my report, I did it as a flowchart. I thought that was sort of an easier way to do it. So you can see on the left the items which I've accomplished, and the items on the right, as you go through the flowchart, are the items that are still in process. So I think this is a very needed position. The question comes up with, for me, you know, is this a position that I feel should continue, or, you know, was I able to achieve everything that needed to be achieved within that 3 months? No. So therefore, to me, it's still ongoing. Therefore, it's still an ongoing position needed. And I think the department has a lot that needs to happen. It has a lot of moving parts, and Sol is doing an amazing job with his time and with his with all the things that he has to do. But I think it's he's probably just about treading water in getting things done. I think that if he has assistance, it will be able to accomplish more. And I think with a town this big, you know, with roughly 655 people and increasing, the dynamics, not dynamics, but the demographics of the town, the fact that we've got a lot more seniors than we used to have, and we have a lot more kids, babies particularly, than we used to have, and both seniors and babies have a higher potential of needs for medical assistance. And I feel that we are not ready with the amount of responders that we have and the amount of training that we have, that with the potential of call volume, we're at the moment, I think we've been very lucky. I keep walking around touching wood that we haven't had major accidents and that we don't have the call volume that the town has a potential of having. But I really feel that it's a time is of the essence, and we really need to get more responders, have our training in hand, have a good understanding of what to do when the situations happen. And I feel that that this position is needed in the assistance with Sol's position to be able to serve the town. Any questions on my report or for me?
Thank you. Could you address the issue on your flowchart? That's the second item about collaboration with the Park Service?
So there's been a memorandum of agreement with the Park Service in place for a number of years. I think it expires in 2 years from now. And that, I don't have the document in front of me, but it's an agreement that the park, the National Park Service, Glacier Bay National Park Service and Preserve, EMS responders and fire responders will assist the Gustavus Volunteer Fire Department when we need more responders or more response. So we have an understanding of that agreement and that we can call upon them to assist us. And when I came into this position, it happened to be coincide with a time that several people responders were out of town. So we were we're slim anyway on responders, and we were very slim. There were just, I think, literally two responders here in town. There was Chantel and myself, and then there was Kelly, who Kelly is she's not ETT certified or EMS EMT certified. And both Kelly and Chantel were working at the clinic. So when they're working at the clinic, they can't just pull away and go on a call. So there was really only me. There was Cassie was out of town. Johan was out of town. Sol was out of town. And that was when I can't remember the dates, but roughly when just after I started. So I went straight to, just before Sol left town, Dr. Vat, Sol and myself went out to the park and talked through that, the memorandum of understanding of assistance to actually what that would look like when we call upon them. Do they have an understanding of what's in our ambulance, of how our equipment works, of what does our report forms look like? How do we call upon them? How do they respond? How do they let us know that they're on their way? So going through all of the details, so we just wanted to iron out what the actual practicality of their assistance looks like. So we went through that, and they've also been joining in on our drills so that they have more of a familiarization with our equipment and also team working with us so that we're working cohesively as a team responding. So I think that's been important.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, and I don't see any hands up. Thank you, Leah.
Thank you.
Okay, next is City Clerk Lieselbeth Parker.
Good evening. It's not too often I get to sit at the table with you guys. It's kind of nice. So the last 3 months have been pretty busy. Last time I gave a report, I think I was only like 2 weeks into the job. So I'm sorry, it's 2 pages long. I'm going to try to give you a brief overview. Some of the bigger tasks that I completed was swearing in the newly elected officials. Now you're 3 months in as well, I believe. So hope you're enjoying that. I set up a new training for all the elected officials with our legislative specialist, and that will be coming up here at the end of January. We have 2 4-hour sessions and then 2 hours for optional that council members can come in and ask our legislative specialist maybe anything that wasn't covered during that time. I became a notary public for Alaska. So now both Ben and I have it. So for anybody who's listening, that is something that we do as a service for our communities. You can come in free of charge and have items notarized. We held an annual open house for the ambulance subscriptions and renewals, business permits, tax exemption applications, vessel registrations, long-term storage, et cetera. Thank you, Sol and Leah, for your assistance on that. We did it the second to last week in December. I would say it was successful. We had 20 plus forms filled out that night, several taken home, but I think it would be more successful if we did one at the beginning of December and then one maybe mid-January. I know a lot of people travel and are out of town. So those are things we'll take into consideration for next year. I've been doing a lot of work on getting my clerk training and development done. So part of my job description is to become a certified municipal clerk. That's about a 2-year process. And then to also become a registered parliamentarian, another about 2-year process. So I've been taking lots of courses. I had the privilege of attending the conference for the municipal clerks in Anchorage, where I was able to learn a lot. There's a list of classes. We got into Title 29, some open meeting acts, the roles of the clerk, was able to network with some other clerks, which was nice. Often if people have a question, they would kind of email it out to all the clerks in Alaska and get feedback. So it's nice to kind of be able to put faces with some of those names. I'm working on social media archiving training through MuniCode. I did some notary training. I became certified through the state of Alaska to do voter registration. So that'll be big this year. So if people are not registered to vote, they can come in and it'll actually be active the day that I sign it. Since I have this certification, they don't have to wait for it to become active once the Juneau office receives it. So that could be big when we are getting down to the wire for registration dates for voting. Doing a lot of learning about parliamentary procedure, did several trainings on taking minutes. I have lots of things going on, several trips coming up for more training. I have a lot of school ahead of me, I guess. And then I have some goals here for 2024, continuing to work on transparency with the community and making it easy for the public to access information. We're looking at maybe going and putting some QR codes on postings, making sure that the communications that are sent to the council and to the mayor, not only can you see them in here in City Hall if you want to come visit me, but also posting those online, making it easy to access the postings in the minutes, looking at possibly trying to get video by the end of the year of these meetings to post. Until then, we're going to continue to post the audio. This month, I'm going to start actually tabbing the audio on the minutes of where you need to listen. So if somebody's going through and they would really like to hear the conversation that happened before passing a resolution, they'll be able to see the time mark on it, go to the audio recording, and know where to look. So they're not having to sit and listen through an hour and a half long meeting for maybe a 4 or 5 minute conversation. Working on some titling guidelines for the city, doing some research there. There's a whole long list of things, but I think those are some of the bigger items. So if anybody has any ideas on ways to make it easier for people to access information, let me know. I'm always open to new ideas. And then at the bottom of my report, as I have to, there is the council member attendance history. And that started in October when the new members were sworn in for this year. Any questions?
All right, thank you. Okay, and the Marine Facilities Coordinator, Larry Platt, isn't available with us, but he has posted, we have his written report, I believe, in the packet. Next up is Ben Sadler, City Treasurer.
Thank you, Shelley. Ben Sadler, City Treasurer. So I don't have anything on the particular numbers, but I do have the P&L if anyone has any questions after I'm done with the few things I am going to talk about. This week, we started the audit that is required of us. The last month or so, I've been working on getting information together. And today, I received a text from one of the auditors saying that all the balances that they had gone over so far were good. And so that was definitely felt good. And hopefully, as they proceed on, it'll continue that way. But that is what I will be doing throughout the week, scanning documents and sharing them with folks in Anchorage. I completed all the end of the year payroll, sent off all the forms, got the W-2s out to the employees. I have just started working on the capital improvement plan. Everything's kind of come up real quick. It seemed like this happened last year too, but that is the nature of it, I guess. I sent out an email asking informing the council that we will need to have an additional work session to go over the capital improvement plan. Hopefully you guys can make it. I know some of you can't. It'll be on the 29th of January, 6 o'clock, normal work session time. We'll go over what's in the plan, what we accomplished last year, what we'd like to add to the plan, and whether or not we want to change the priorities. Coming up, I know I'll be talking about it again, but The NCO tonight that we're going to introduce is $200,000 surplus that we want to put into the AMLIP accounts. This will be the last big NCO of the fiscal year as far as surplus goes. So I know it seems like we put in a lot the last couple months, and now we're going to put in a lot more, but it's kind of the, we're hitting our dry period for the next 6 months or so. And then the other thing I've been working on, this goes with the capital improvement plan too, is just trying to get some of the projects closed out so that we can see what we accomplished last year and not carrying things forward. So that's basically what I've been up to. Also, I guess we'll talk about the certified financial statement when it comes up. So I'll just hold off. Does anybody have any questions?
No questions. Thank you, Ben.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, and then last up is City Administrator Kathy Leary.
Good evening, everyone. So we've had a very busy last 4 weeks. Sol mentioned, and we now have a fully executed fire protection agreement between us and the Forest Service. The title is the Cooperative Fire Protection Agreement between the City of Gustavus and the USDA Forest Service Tongass National Forest. It'll be available on the city's website, or you can email Sol or me for a copy if you're interested. The scrap metal contamination issue, if you'll recall that last month I had reported to council what was going on with that, and that we ended up having to send Ian down to the yard to isolate the item out of the bale. That was completed. I've received 2 out of 3 responses for an estimate for what I hope is the final effort to move the box of the radioactive debris from the AML yard in Seattle. Problem with that is it's got to be picked up by a specific carrier, delivered to a site that accepts low-level radioactive material. And the reason I asked for more than one quote wasn't just because of the cost, it was also because they can't pick it up until March, and I'm kind of getting hounded by the AML people to get it out of there. So trying to see who can do it the fastest and with the least amount of cost in consideration. The cost for removal isn't going to be cheap. So I've contacted our insurance company. We are covered for specific instances, but they've never had anything like this happen before. So they're going to go through the policy with a fine tooth comb and try to see. In my reading of it, I feel like we should be covered, but there's always their insurance company's caveats that they manage to find. So I'm waiting to hear from them as well. I've also asked Ben to set this up as an account for a project, because it's enough revenue that we need to account for this for insurance purposes. And if we have to do an NCO for this specific event. And I also would like to purchase a radiation detection instrument for the DRC or for the whole city in case we need to ever use it again, and for Ian to use at the DRC to prevent anything like this in the future. I spent some time on the phone with the recommended vendor, and this is Ludlam, which I guess is a very popular one in the country, and I reviewed our options for the appropriate instruments for our needs, and I'll get with Ian on that, and we'll figure out what we want to move forward with buying that tool. Also, on the airport law enforcement TSA issue, I've been in communication with Christopher Gunz, who's the new regional director for DOT. He asked me for the GVA survey results that Leah had sent out doing that basic 2-question survey that she did regarding lack of jet service and time frame of jet service. And he wanted to see what the comments were and what the local impacts were. So I sent him copies of that along with the letter that Leah prepared for Jeff Larson to take to Alaska Airlines Citizen Advisory Group in Seattle last month. Director Gwynn sent me his documents related to the issues surrounding the availability of law enforcement at the airport, or the lack of availability. And we went through and discussed a lot of the challenges that we have with the recent letter from the Park Service on the matter. We walked through those documents so that I could get more details on that challenge, as well as some of the other issues moving forward. He had drafted a Gustavus Airport brief, kind of like a white paper that he's going to be providing to commissioner, to the legislature, to Alaska Airlines. He talked about the history and where the situation is today, and described the law enforcement expectations that are part of what's called a 139 airport. Although the law enforcement expectations are 45 CFR, they're part of TSA, Homeland Security, and not part of the FAA. So there's a difference in there. We asked if we could submit some additional bullet points to his white paper of some of the drawbacks and things, the potential damage that could be done by not having the jet service come in. And we submitted those. Leah and I worked on them. And he included those, and they'll be going to, like I said, the department, the governor, and I'm assuming Alaska Airlines and legislators. So I think he'll have that wrapped up here in the next few days. We're still waiting for news on the Defending Alaska Communities from Wildfire through Community Wildfire Protection Planning Grant. And the Alaska Municipal League is working to seek funding on our behalf to create or update that our protection plans for Gustavus. I continue to monitor funding opportunities that hopefully the city will benefit from, although with the recent borough and Nature Conservancy and the airport issues, that's taken a little bit of a backseat. Sol and I at a Teams meeting, he mentioned Lexipol earlier, that is they're doing the grant narrative piece for us. We're going to upload the full grant to FEMA, but they're doing the grant narrative, and we had a hour-long meeting with them for them to ask us questions about the organization and the city and what we do. And I just sent them both the NPS agreement that Leah was mentioning, the cooperative agreement, and our wildland firefighting agreement with the USDA, which they hopefully will be able to use to get help with the grant funds. Real quick, a septic update. So I just want to say that, you know, this project has been a pretty good success considering some of the stumbling blocks that we had a little bit when we first started with it. Everyone's efforts on this project enabled the pumping of 72 tanks for the Gustavus homeowners and businesses. And one storage tank's fairly full, another partially full. Juno Septic came over just yesterday and pumped out 4,500 more gallons. They have three trips left to empty the tanks ready for next summer's schedule. So in my report, folks can email gustavusseptic@gmail.com to get on their list. If anybody wants a copy of the report, they can ask me. I can send it to them. John Barry produced this report that he had to provide to ADEC to satisfy our permit. And the full report, like I said, is available if you're interested. Just a few bullet points. We had 77 septic tanks were reported pumped. 85,400 total gallons of septic were reported pumped from the septic tanks. 71,350 total gallons of septic were reported transferred through the holding tanks to the Juno Wastewater Treatment Plant. And another 14,000 total gallons were reported hauled directly from septic tanks to Juno Wastewater Treatment Plant. So I'd say that's a pretty good success rate for our first year. Mayor Owens and I participated in a phone call with Jed Smith, the main staffer for the local boundary commission, and we had several questions for him. We invited him to Gustavus, but his travel schedule wouldn't allow for it. But in the end, Liesl, I think, put that out in the news already. We scheduled a Zoom meeting with him for January 25th at 6 p.m.
No, you're the first one to tell them that. The posting will officially go out tomorrow.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
I thought we already did. But okay. So that will be happening. And we've requested additional information regarding PILT and the amount of available state lands that are actually inside of the proposed borough. He said they're compiling that information, but they don't have it yet. There's a lot of things they don't have yet that we would like as answers to our questions. I've also contacted several I went over this in the work session. I've contacted several community members from various businesses and user groups to ask them to look at the petition and give us a synopsis of how they anticipate that the borough is going to impact them. I mean, because we can't do it all, and we need help from people in the community of things maybe we wouldn't even think to look at. So, and we can include that information in our response to the local boundary commission. So, for instance, I contacted some charter fishermen and commercial fishermen and said, you guys need to look at this. And thanks to Whitney, who requested and received the GIS maps from Community and Economic Development Boundary Commission folks, so she can look at some of the boundary considerations. In February, the Alaska Municipal League will be holding its winter legislative meeting in Juneau. This is an opportunity to bring forth our concerns, projects, funding requests, set up meeting with legislators and department heads. If we have issues like with Department of Natural Resources, for example, we can set up meetings while we're there to go meet with them. and I pretty much, that's the main ticket items. We, of course, have all our other day-to-day activities that take a lot of time. Addressing roads and community requests and complaints and working with contractors and other teleconferences and stuff. So it's been a busy time. If anybody has any questions.
Mike?
I just want to reinforce my feeling that you did a great job on the septic project. And that's a really big success for our community and for our city. It's helped address an environmental problem and an economic problem for many of our residents. And congratulations on a job well done.
Thanks. You're here. Okay. Oh,
I have a question.
Yes.
Kathy, when would we be able to look at the working draft that you received from the director of the OD?
I'll have to ask him. I don't know if it's like an ongoing thing he keeps adding to, but I think he's supposed to finalize it and hand it off to, you know, his superiors and the governor's office. I can ask that question.
And I just wanted to see if it was expressed to the DOT director how big of a hot topic issue having a law enforcement officer present in Gustavus will be. And that's, I feel like that's kind of taking momentum of itself without it actually being discussed.
He's well aware of it, as are many people at various levels. He understands that, and it's why we're trying to look at all different angles. I mean, you know, if we end up having to find a 4-hour-a-day person through whatever means, whether it's from the state or whether it's from somewhere during the summer, during the jet, we may have to do that. That's kind of the last resort, but we'll see what happens. I'm hoping we can look at other angles like definitions of emergencies and other MOUs or I mean, I said it as a joke, but I don't know why they can't do it. I said, heck, let's just deputize Jeff. He's sitting in the truck, sitting on the runway. You know, why can't he do it? But apparently that's jurisdictionally not going to happen. But I said, you know, give him a badge and a gun. We should be good to go. But anyway, I know it's not funny, but it's, we're trying to come up with whatever we can do short of having to have some other kind of full-time law enforcement. So
thank you.
Yep.
Okay, Brian Taylor.
Great. Thanks. That's a heck of a report, Kathy. So congratulations. You got a lot done here. And I'll echo what Mike said on the Septage project. That's a huge success. So really well done. I'm curious, a couple clarifying details. On the scrap metal issue with the contamination and the radiation, you said you've gotten one quote. Do you have a ballpark on, obviously we don't know if the insurance will cover anything, but do you have a number or have you heard a number yet? That's mostly a curiosity thing.
Yes, I have one number from the first company I asked, which is $5,000.
Okay, thanks for that.
For them to, so they have to get a permit. They have to send a truck to get it that is permitted to bring it to the facility, and then they condense it at the facility, and then they take it off to some other certified low level. There's different radiation sites all over the place in Utah, and in the Eastern Washington site is mostly like military. There's one in Texas. There's one in Idaho. It's all of the procedures and processes and trucking and transport that they have to go through in order to do that. So when I contacted the second guy who has the place in Eastern, who I thought would have the place in Eastern Washington, he said they're not going to get any less than $5,000 either, but they would be able to maybe do it before March. And so I had, he gave me one other name of somebody to call. He doesn't think that, which I did, and I haven't heard from them. He doesn't think that they're set up to handle this low amount of waste. But he told me to give them a try. It's a very complicated and permit driven process, and it's already cost us, you know, the environmental group that I had to hire to go over to make sure the Connex was clear after they took the pallet out, and to make sure they did all the readings that they needed to do and write a report, was about $1,200. And that, coupled with buying a monitor and sending Ian down there, we're looking at 10 grand when all is said and done.
Interesting. Well, I will be waiting with bated breath to see if the insurance companies, or what the insurance company will cover, if anything. Another follow-up, if you don't mind, I apologize for having loads of questions here. And especially if I have missed this, if we've had news sent out to us that I haven't seen, you mentioned in the TSA issue, challenges with a recent letter received from the Park Service. Do you have any clarifying details on that? I haven't heard that one.
Well, we did have an agreement with them over the years, or we didn't. The state did, to provide law enforcement services generally and at the airport. And because they don't find having them available for X amount of time every day during the jet, even though it's okay for them to be 15 minutes away, they don't deem that service to be an emergency because no emergency has been constituted. And I don't know what level of legal opinion this came from, but that's something we're trying to figure out too. But that's what they've said, and that the law enforcement officials, if they were to go do something and something happened and it wasn't under their jurisdiction, that the law enforcement officer could be held personally responsible.
Interesting. Thanks.
All right. And Janine, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. I'm curious, in terms of the input on the borough, what type of input we've gotten, if any, from the National Park Service?
As far as I know, they're not taking any position on it right now, but that's a much larger and bigger question that I'm not prepared to answer at this time.
Thank you.
Okay, are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Kathy. We're moving on now to public comment on non-agenda items. This is comment period is for non-agenda items only and not intended for discussion. If you'd like to make public comment on non-agenda items, please click the participants icon and raise the hand icon to raise your hand. If you do not have that option, unmute your phone. The clerk will add you to the list and remute you when it's your turn to speak. State your full name before speaking and refrain from speaking if your comments have already been addressed by another speaker. Please don't use profanity and be respectful in your comments. You will have one opportunity to comment here and again during the public comment before the end of the meeting. Comments should be kept brief, set a two-minute time and roughly about a two-minute time limit. Are there any members of the public wish to speak at this time on non-agenda items?
I actually missed being able to speak. Do you hear me?
Okay. Who is this, please?
This is Kimber, and on the TSA that just came up, I was processing that. When do you think you'll have an answer? Because I have to shift my entire business to Juneau if people can't fly into Gustavus. That's pretty important to me. I have 287 people who fly in here. So if they can't fly in here, I have to shift everything out of Juneau. So when will you have an answer? Because they're making their reservations now.
Is that to me or to you?
Yes. No, I don't have an answer to that, Kathy. You?
So Kimber, you're asking when you think this might be dealt with?
Yeah, all my clients have made their reservations.
Okay.
And so then I have to like find hotel rooms and everything in Juneau if they can't come fly into Gustavus. There's a lot to be done. It's huge.
Yeah, there is. And I will be meeting again with the director. They're doing whatever they can at their level. It's been elevated to the governor's office as well. I'm sure Alaska Airlines isn't going to want to lose their essential air service subsidy, nor are they going to want to look at all of the detrimental domino effect of losing employees and many other things that would hit them and the community. So I'm sure we're going to figure something out. It's just a matter of what that is. And so I'm sorry, it's up to the state, really. We're just trying to do what we can to support the effort.
Okay.
If there are no other questions, thank you, Kathy. Do any other members of the public wish to speak?
Are you talking about the borough now as well?
That's on the agenda, Kimber.
Oh, okay, later. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, or at least in the mayor's report. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. And let's see. We have one item on the consent agenda, the certificate of records destruction. And I would ask if Liesl could describe what that item is. It's agenda item number 7.
Yes. So throughout the year, we go through our records and we pull out the items that no longer need to be kept according to our records retention schedule. Sorry, spaced out there for a second. And so today we have on here DRC POS and billing system information from 2019, the DRC daily log forms from 2020, council meeting documentation from 2016, permits and registrations from 2019, contracts from 2013, sales tax from fiscal year 2020, and EMS reports from 2010 through 2013. And so once this is passed and signed off, then we will destroy them via shredding. And then Ben will probably be my witness to that, and he'll sign off on the bottom of it. And then we keep this record for our record, showing that we have properly followed our retention schedule per our ordinance.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. And the next two items, and does anyone have a question? Okay, the next two items, the ordinance for public hearing and unfinished business. Excuse me,
ma'am. Madam Mayor, we need a motion to process that.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Yeah, I'll move to approve the consent agenda by unanimous consent.
Second.
Okay. The motion was made by Brian Taylor and seconded by Mike. And the motion is, let's see here. Move to adopt the consent agenda by unanimous consent as presented. Are there any objections to adopting the agenda by unanimous consent? Hearing none, the consent agenda is passed by unanimous consent. Okay, the next item is a new business, and item number 8, approved scoping document for the Glen Stitch Cleaning and Culvert Replacement Project. Item number 9, and the fourth, whereas, as a brief description of the project, the primary drainage route on the west side of Gustavus Airport, Wilson Road, and Glen Stitch Road. We will, I'll entertain a motion.
Okay, this is Jim Miskoviak. I move to approve the scoping document for the Glen's Ditch Cleaning and Culvert Replacement Project and to include it as a priority in the CAPS's funding request to the legislature.
Okay, is there a second?
A second, Taylor.
Okay. So there's a motion by Jim and seconded by Mike to approve the scoping document for the Glen's Ditch Cleaning and Culvert Replacement Project and to include it as a priority in the CAPS's funding request to the legislature. Did you want to describe this process, Mike? Did you want to talk about it for purposes of discussion?
Sure. We went over this a little bit in our work session. A scoping document is just the initial authorization to start working the project, and it is intended to give a scope for the project, but note it's by no means a completed plan or design for the project. It is a description of it and the opportunity for the council to say, yes, we'd like to proceed with that project, or no, we don't want to proceed with it. And the intent of this project is to clean the Glen's Ditch from Gustavus Road to about the Nagoonberry parking area, or perhaps a few yards just beyond that. After that, the brush isn't too great in the ditch. And it's mainly to remove willows and alders, particularly willows, that have grown in the ditch over many decades since it was built. In order to improve its function, cleaning ditches like this is a maintenance item that you just have to do once in a while. And we think that this is, or at least I think, it's important to do because this is one of the main discharge routes for floodwaters and heavy rain and so forth from Central Gustavus. It drains the airport pond area, the area around Four Corners, and any water that happens to come down Wilson Road or onto Gustavus Road in the area of the ditch, this is the main route for it to get out to Icy Passage. And in times of very heavy rainfall, The vegetative material in the ditch really restricts the flow. I've seen it under those conditions, and I can say it really is a significant issue. We also have a couple of undersized culverts, the one on the section line by Kimber's place, and another one down at Mossy's driveway, that are undersized and failing and are also restricting flow. And then there's a third culvert a little farther down that was put in some years ago to serve a driveway at a site. It was never constructed. The lot remains undeveloped, and I have no plans for that to be developed. So we would remove that one, and the first two we would replace with some sort of a bridge. And we hope not a particularly expensive one, but something like what's called a flat rack bridge that are less expensive and serve well for driveways and the like. So that's the intent of the project. There, the general scope, there are issues, concerns about PFAS contamination in the water coming down the ditch and also in the sediments. We have only one sediment sample in that area. It was non-detect for PFAS. And the last time that Shannon Wilson did sampling of ditches and water in the area, there's one sample just before Gustavus Road that's also non-detectable. But that doesn't mean that those two samples characterize the ditch entirely. There also are issues in the area with invasive plants, particularly phalaris and reed canary grass. Many of you are probably fully aware that intersection of same old road and Glenn's Ditch Road, that whole area is just infested with phalaris. It's really unfortunate. And when we have to deal with do road work in areas that have phalaris, we need to take some precautions to make sure we're not spreading that to places. We have to decide what to do with material we take out of the ditch. And so there's a lot of work to plan this project. We will almost certainly need an engineering consultant to look at it more carefully, determine exactly what permitting we need to do. I'm certain we would need to do at least a core permit and a fish and game permit, but the consultants can determine whether there's anything else, such as a stormwater discharge permit, as Whitney has suggested. So there are things like that that we need to develop, and so this is probably a multi-stage project. But the first thing is to approve the scoping document. The next would be to fund at least a design phase so we can get a consultant on board to design the project and help us determine what the actual cost will be. We did a rough estimate on this of $100,000, but I can see where it could be more than that, perhaps by quite a bit. It would be very nice to be able to get grant funding for this and to apply for grants or to put it on the CAPSIS list for legislative funding. We need to have a scoping document done that describes the project. That's just the first step. So approving it would allow us to begin that. It doesn't, of course, authorize any construction. There's no funding yet to spend even on PFAS sampling in the ditch. So once we have a scoping document approved, we can propose an NCO and do at least an initial funding. But so this just gets the project started, gives the authority to the project manager to proceed to develop the project. So that's a description of where we are.
Thank you, Mike. At this time, I'll ask if there's any public comment on this item. I see Sally McLaughlin has her hand up.
Thank you, Mayor Owens, and thank you, Mike, for that full description. You addressed some of my comments that I wanted to make, but I just wanted to make sure that everybody had seen the letter that Whitney sent and you've had a chance to read it, And I just really urge you to, as a council, to postpone this discussion, or maybe not postpone it if you're just approving the scoping document at this time, but please to consider all of the things that she mentioned in that letter regarding ownership of the ditch. But most importantly to me, of course, is the PFAS. If nothing else, please develop a plan to develop, develop a plan to test for PFAS before proceeding. And it sounds like you've already done that. I just wanted to make my comments made. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Sally. Let's see. I see
any questions for Sally.
Any questions for Sally? And then we have Gustavus with her hand up. Gustavus, whoever that is, would you like to speak?
It's Whitney. I have no idea how to switch my name right now. I tried several times and I failed miserably. I don't think you adequately addressed the ownership of the right-of-way that seemingly is abandoned. So I think it's now all private property, and whether the city will be...
Oops, we lost her.
...clear for future PFAS mitigation, as well as the liability of owning a ditch, or being the right-of-way of a ditch. Right now, it seemingly has reverted to private ownership, and therefore I am questioning whether there's any legal authority for the city to be working in that area. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for your comments, Whitney.
You might want to ask if anybody's got a question for her.
Does anyone have a question for Whitney?
Just to summarize, kind of cut out there, Whitney. To summarize, what a part of what you were saying was, if all of that land is private property, why is the city taking ownership and maintaining it? Was that part of your question? Am I correct?
Am I muted or am I I'm unmuted. I think the right-of-way has sunsetted in 1990. If the state is not honoring that anymore, then I think the city needs to legally clarify that right-of-way and assume it. I do not think that any work should be done on private property without the approval of all of those landowners at this point. In 1970, it appeared to be one landowner, and obviously that has been subdivided, and now it's every landowner needs to be in support of the project.
All right. Thank you, Whitney. Looks like Janine has a question. Oh, her hand has gone down. Okay, Janine, I don't see your hand come back up. Does anyone else want to comment, or do they have questions about this? Yes, Rachel? Oh, I'm sorry. Except that we, I think, can move back to a council discussion without any...
I don't know. Can I make I don't know how to put a hand up, actually.
Okay, go ahead, Whitney. Kimber.
I live right there where that is... where it's all happening, and I'm definitely feel like we need to clear vegetation out of the ditch. But I know when there was a little bit of work just done on the other side of my driveway, my well was severely impacted. I have to, because of the fact that it went so deep and all the sediment that came, my well is right there at the corner, and I'm testing, and I'm doing all the PFAS, I'm doing everything, and I don't have any of that coming up. They did test that, but I have lots of other things that did come up. But the fact that they want to take all of that water, like Whitney said, and come down, and then the debris put up into the forest right there on the side, and all that PFAS put right on the ground, besides eliminating a really beautiful area that students and myself and the First Nations and everybody harvest and study the lands, is ridiculous. if you're going to, I think it all that PFAS needs to go out to the ocean on the other side. Why put it through our neighborhoods? I agree with Whitney. That's the end of my comments.
Mike, did you want to respond?
We normally just, I don't have a question for her. Okay. No, sorry. I can discuss those issues when it's a council comment.
Okay. I guess I'm getting confused here. Okay. Are there any other members of the public that would like to comment? Okay. Now we can move on to discussion with council members. Okay, Mike.
Okay. First on the ownership issue that Whitney raises, the plats show that the ditch and Glenn's Ditch Road, which is a city road, we've been maintaining it for years. We just did an improvement along it this last summer. The property corners are outside of both the ditch and the road, with exception of one track that goes across it, that appears to go across it. And it would be essential to check with that owner to make sure they have no issue with us cleaning the ditch along the section of the road, because on that one lot, their corners go all the way across the ditch and are their property line on the west side is the same as the east side property of the lots on the other side. But the rest of the route is all not on private land, according to the plats. Now, that's all stuff that we can confirm when we do the engineering design, make sure there's, but that's, if you look on the DCCED map, it's fairly clear what that is, what that situation is. With regard to PFAS, we wouldn't want to move PFAS to any place we don't have it, if there is any there. But if the sampling shows there is no PFAS in the sediments and so forth, then we don't have to worry about transporting it. With regard to whether we put the, or where we put the vegetative debris, and we may end up with some muck, where, in my view, we wouldn't be excavating muck and all of the plant life in there. There's marsh marigolds down along a lot of that ditch. We mostly need to pull out the larger willows that are growing out of the ditch, rather than cutting them off and having them just re-sprout. So we think the best route, or the best thing to do probably, is to use an excavator and pull them out. And so we would probably be excavating a lot of stuff along there. We would get some muck and so forth out of the ditch. We have to have a permit for that with both Fish and Game and the Corps of Engineers. And we would follow their directions for that. That leaves the question of where we take the vegetative debris. And one, the possibilities are several. We're not tied into any one of them. When we did the Rink Creek Road work and the ditch along Wilson Road, we sidecasted all the material onto the just immediately next to the ditch, and the stuff quickly grows over. That was, we thought at that time, for those projects, certainly much better than hauling it someplace and dumping it. Hauling means more traffic. It means more diesel consumption, more emissions and all of that, and a lot more cost. So there is a possibility of side casting along some of the ditch, but the areas, once we get to the section line and on south, or actually once we get to Kimber's property and on south, we probably don't have any place there that's good for side casting. So if we have very much in the way of material, it will probably have to be hauled somewhere. One possibility was that triangular piece of land that is next to the ditch that the city owns. We'd have to decide where we pile it, you know, and do we have an aesthetic problem with that? Is it better to try to find another place to haul it? So those are all things that we'd have to develop in the project. But there, Kimber makes a good point she made to me on the phone about the aesthetic issues in that property. I prefer to generally to pile debris like that in the woods and let it rot. I don't like to burn it and that sort of thing. I'd rather not haul it if we don't have to, but those are all options. And we have to try to decide as we develop the project, what's the best thing to do there. So those, but those concerns are certainly worthy of raising as they have, and we'll have to deal with them.
Okay, so as I understand it, we need to get this listed, included in our capital improvement plan so that we can submit it this month for the CAPSIS funding, and that we have some questions about ownership and PFAS testing. The question is, can we proceed with this project and get it into the plan and answer these questions later on, or do we want to postpone this? We missed the CAPSIS opportunity. Yes. Go ahead, Rachel.
Can you turn your mic on, please?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So my question is, the bridges just seem like overkill. Why can't we just go through with the cleaning if you absolutely have to resize a culvert? I mean, the bridges are, I mean, that's a huge undertaking, and I feel like that those are funds that could be better used elsewhere. And that would bring the overall cost down, if I'm correct. And also, why are we just removing a culvert that's just there? Is it causing a problem? Like, you're not going to put a bridge in, you're just taking it away.
Sure, those are good questions. The culverts are all undersized and failing. Some of them are badly rusted or cracked through and beginning to cave in. But just the fact that they were undersized reduces the flow. And it also means that if you get debris coming down, they get caught across the entrance to the culvert, things like that. Now, there's one culvert that we don't have in this project that worries me, and that's the one under Gustavus Road that is also probably undersized, but that's the state of Alaska owns that culvert. It's their responsibility. We can clean and do our part. There's some things that we're just going to have to insist that the state do if they're not willing to do the rest of this. And by the way, we still need to keep pushing the state to see if they would take this responsibility. It seems to me they should. The ditch was done originally to drain the airport. It still does. It's the drainage for the ponds, but it also now drains and will take flow if we get a heavy flood down onto Wilson Road. That's why we did the large ditch along Wilson Road to capture that. It's directed into this. But if we've got a lot of restriction downstream, that can all just back up and we end up with a flood in the subdivisions there that we'd certainly not like to have again.
Okay, so. Kathy, did you want to comment?
Yeah, I just want to point out that as was stated, this is sort of to get the project on the books, not necessarily do everything that's in it. Investigative work will still have to be done, but getting it into the CAPSIS project as a priority allows us to apply for grants. It also allows us to talk to our legislators who hopefully will bring DOT into the conversation so that we can maybe move forward with having them help us or having them relook at whether it's within their jurisdiction to do something about. So putting this out there formally gives us the opportunity to deal with the issue in many different venues. And that's my two cents of trying to get it approved.
Thank you. Are we ready for the question? Go ahead, Janine.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I think it's a really good step we've taken in having in the scoping document the fact that we have to look at the PFAS and to put that as a something to consider when making the project. And so I'm glad to hear this discussion and the input that as the project, if it goes forward, that the scoping document can more strongly address the in the beginning the planning phase to include the PFAS testing and just looking at that in general. And so I think that it's a really good point to make that this is the scoping document. It's the beginning of it, but I certainly hope that we make sure that the PFAS issue does become a very important part of the planning process as well as the decision making as the project goes forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Janine. Are we ready for the question? Okay. Madam
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Mikowiak?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
The vote passes.
Okay. And moving on to item 9, I've asked if the Treasurer Ben Sadler could come and join us for the next couple of items to give us just a quick summary of what they are.
Okay, so which item is item 9?
This is item 9, resolution CY24-01.
Is that the certified financial statement? I'm sorry, I don't have the number. Oh, the CAPSIS. Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. So this is the CAPSIS resolution. Each year, at the beginning of the year, the state asks for communities to submit resolutions along with funding requests, legislative funding requests. Each year we submit two or three items. It looks like this year we've added one. We have four items. The fourth item being the Glenn's Ditch that you guys just talked about. The other three items are the same three items that we asked for last year and alternative version of what we asked for the year before. New truck for the fire department with a skid unit, the main building replacement for the DRC, and gravel extraction improvement project, which is basically just trying to get something that can help us get all of the gravel out of the gravel pits without having to clear more land and get gravel that way. So this is a pretty routine thing that we do once a year, and this is our request for this year.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. Do we have a motion? Kyle?
I move to adopt resolution CY24-01, submission of capital projects submission and information system CAPSIS to the Alaska Legislature.
Is there a second?
I second.
Okay, Rachel seconds. Let's see, Kyle moves to adopt a resolution CY24-01 submission of capital projects submission and information system CAPSIS to the Alaska Legislature, and seconded by Rachel. Is there public comment at this time? Oh. Okay, this will be a long one. Thank you, I think. Okay. City of Gustavus, Alaska, resolution CY24-01, a resolution approving the submission of capital improvement funding requests. Whereas the GVFD lost use of its smaller fire truck engine 27 due to contamination from PFAS foam, the City of Gustavus wants to replace it with a smaller 4x4 one-ton pickup truck with a skid unit. This truck would benefit the community by adding a vehicle to respond to fires in areas that Engine 1 is unable to reach. This truck would have a plow attachment to allow it to widen plowed areas during the winter when accumulated snow narrows roads and driveways, making it harder for the fire trucks and ambulance to access them. The skid unit would allow it to transport up to 200 gallons of water to wildland fires and could include a patient basket, allowing transport of patients from areas the city's ambulance cannot currently access. And whereas the main DRC building serves as the customer interface for sorting recyclables and dropping off refuse, and also houses two balers and a glass pulverizer, The facility has outgrown its current operating capacity, and a new building is needed to provide adequate space for normal operations that is safe for both customers and staff. With increased use and projected growth, a new building to house upgraded equipment in the future is necessary. This project would allow the construction of a new main building of 6,000 square feet with separate dedicated areas for customer delivery and waste processing equipment. It would have a concrete floor and areas of the building with concrete push walls. And whereas the City of Gustavus owns the sole source of gravel for use on city roads and for private and commercial use, with current extraction methods, available material from the gravel pits could be exhausted in the next few years. This project would extend the usefulness of existing gravel ponds by implementing an alternative extraction system, such as a drag line or dredge, along with support equipment, a truck scale, site preparation, and by identifying an operation plan, including staffing, training, and storage and selling of gravel. And whereas Glen Stitch is the primary drainage route on the west side of Gustavus Airport, Wilson Road, and Glen Stitch Road, it was platted as a state DOT PF maintained drainage easement and constructed 5 decades ago to drain the airport ponds. DOTPUF has declined to clean it from the Gustavus Road south, claiming the drainage easement has expired. Because Glen Stitch runs along a city road, it falls to the City of Gustavus to maintain and upgrade it, and requires to prevent flooding of critical airport lands and city roads. It is badly restricted by vegetation and requires cleaning and replacement of culverts to accommodate the increasing flow needs from heavier storms occurring due to climate change. The city proposes to replace 2 culverts with simple flat rack bridges to prevent future restrictions due to isostatic rebound. The project will require engineering design and specifications by a consultant. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the city, Gustavus City Council, approves and prioritizes the following CY24 Capital Improvement Project CIP funding request to the Alaska Legislature in the amounts indicated below, and encourages the legislature and governor to consider them favorably. Number one, GVFD truck and skid unit, $90,000. 2, disposal of recycling center main building replacement, $3,832,560. Number 3, gravel extraction improvement project, $500,000. And number 4, Glen Stitch design, cleaning, and bridge installation, $100,000. Where do we go now? Let's see. Did we call for the contractor? Sorry, I thought we had public comment. Do any members of the public wish to comment? I see no hands raised. Is there any debate on this issue? I don't see any council hands raised. Are we ready for the question? Okay, Madam Clerk, could you call the question?
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
The motion passes.
All right, thank you. Moving on to item 10. And I asked the treasurer, Ben Taylor, Ben Taylor, to again give us a short explanation of what this is.
Can you tell me what item 10 is, please?
Okay, this is CY24-02, and I'm going to need it.
Okay, the certified financial statement?
Yes.
Yes, so as I said last week, or for anyone who wasn't here last week, this is a certified financial statement. Each year we are required to provide the state with either a certified financial statement or a completed audit report. And because the audit didn't happen months ago and is going to take some time, we've gone ahead and created a certified financial statement so that we can use it going forward for anything we might need it for. This is the report that our financial software generated, and now the council just needs to approve it, and then the mayor will sign off certifying that the statements that are here are true, as far as she is aware.
Thank you, Ben. Do I have a motion? Okay, Mike.
I move to approve resolution CY24-02, certifying the annual certified financial statement of revenues and authorized expenditures for the year ending June 30, 2023.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Jim Mack seconds it. Let's see. It is moved by Mike and seconded by Jim to approve resolution CY24-02, certifying the annual certified financial statement of revenues and authorized expenditures for the year ending June 30th, 2023. And I'll read it. A resolution certifying the annual certified financial statement of revenues and authorized expenditures for the year ending June 30th, 2023. Whereas the City of Gustavus is a recognized second-class city, whereas second-class cities are required by AS 29-20-640, (A), (2), to submit a certified financial statement of income and expenditures or audit for the year ending June 30, 2023 to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And now, therefore, be it resolved that the attached certified financial statement of Gustavus, Alaska for the financial year ending June 30th, 2023 is true and complete to the best of our knowledge. Is there public comment on this matter at this time? Okay, not seeing public comment. Would anyone on the council care to speak on this issue? Okay, no one. I see no hands raised. Are we ready for the question? Okay, Madam Clerk, could you do the roll call?
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay. And let's see here. I think I would, if no one objects, I would like, since the treasurer is sitting at the table with us, proceed with item 12. Take item 12 instead of item 11 at this time. Is there any objection? Then we'll return to item 11. Okay. This is FY24-10-NCO, introduction of surplus transfer to AMLIP capital project long-term public hearing on February 20th, 2024. Is there a motion?
I move to approve FY24-10-NCO, introduction surplus transfer to AMLIP capital project long-term.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Rachel, it was moved by Rachel and seconded by Kyle. The motion, I move to approve FY24-10-NCO, introduction surplus transfer to AMLIP capital project long term. And I will read it at this time. Oh, an NCO. Oh, lucky me. Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. I was on a roll with reading the resolutions. Sorry, everybody. Good. Okay. So I guess, do we have public comment at this time on this matter? Seeing none, does the council wish to comment? Okay. No council member does. Are we ready for the question? Okay, Madam Clerk, would you do the roll call vote?
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay. Our next item is item 11. To approve the regular EMS coordinator position. And Janine, do you have a motion?
I move to approve the regular EMS coordinator position.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. And Mike seconds. All right. The motion is to approve, made by Janine, seconded by Mike, move to approve the regular EMS coordinator position. Is there a public comment? Or let's see, I guess the maker of the motion may provide a summary. Janine, would you like to provide a summary?
Well,
or you could defer. Would you defer to me to provide a summary?
I can certainly, if you would, please.
Okay. Okay, this is a temporary 3-month position of the EMS coordinator is about to end, and this is a proposal to continue it as a full-time position with a flexible 20-hour work week. And although the community is cautious about adding new positions, the population of Gustavus has increased dramatically. Between census years 2010 and 2020, the population increased by 48%. And Gustavus has been described as one of the fastest growing communities in Alaska. In addition, the National Fire Protection Association reports a substantial increase in EMS calls nationwide, with 95% EMS and 5% fire calls. I think that what I have done actually is moved into council debate. So at this time, I'll revert back and ask if there is public comment on this issue. I don't see any public comment. Okay, then I'll pick up and continue with my comments. I wanted to read the an email that was sent to us by our medical director, Dr. Rod Vaught, offering his support, dated January 11th, 2024. Gustavus City Council members, I'm writing to you regarding your consideration of establishing a permanent part-time EMS coordinator position. I would like to express my wholehearted support for establishing this position. I strongly believe that the position is crucial for the well-being of our community. We've already seen marked improvement in our ENS system as a result of the brief tenure of our current temporary EMS coordinator. Please feel free to contact me at any time regarding more detailed and specific thoughts regarding this important decision. Thank you for all your dedication and work. Rod Vaught, MD, FAFP, EMS Medical Director, Gustavus Volunteer Fire Department. All right. Do other members of the council wish to speak? Yes, go ahead, Rachel.
Just once again, going on the topic of rewriting SOL or the fire chief's current position, rewriting their duties and expectations with this new position being added. It takes off a lot of what was originally described as his job description. If we could just maybe go look into editing that and adding the update of the mitigation and all those things that he will now be doing instead of the EMS coordinating.
Okay. I think we had a discussion about this at the workstation. Kathy, did you want to address the new duties that are being added?
Well, we have not updated it yet. Mm-hmm. We have just simply provided some guidance on additional items such as disaster coordination and you know, various processes that we want to see happening that, you know, there just wasn't time to do before. Mm-hmm. Inventories, he's helping a lot on grants for getting things for the fire department and for some of the hazardous, not the hazard mitigation, but the firefighting plans and all of the plans that are disaster prone type of plans that we will be doing moving forward. And additionally, we're looking at some industrial safety trainings in partnership with the park to get some of these certifications in place that aren't necessarily EMS related. And He'll be helping a lot with that. We need to update the description, but we have provided documentation to the chief on expectations of the additional items at this point.
Okay, thank you. All right, any more questions? Are we ready for the question?
Maybe.
Oh, I'd go like ahead, Mike.
Comment. Yeah, I've long hoped that our fire department would be just absolutely the best of any small town in Alaska. And there are times when actually we approach that. We've got great volunteers. We need more of them, but we've got great volunteers. We have a chief who's dedicated to making the department all it can be. There are a lot of things that we've identified with the help of Chief Dave Miller from Sitka and our medical director, Dr. Rod Vaught, that are steps that we can take to take us to a new level, the kind of level where we need to be with our population going up and the potential for more disasters due to climate change that the fire department ends up having to respond to in an emergency, whether it's a flood or a forest fire or that sort of thing. And just the rising number of, population of our community and the activity here, our department needs to be ready to respond at levels that they didn't have to do in the past. And they can do it. But we need to support them as a council, as an administration, to allow them to be their very best. And there's a lot of work for the fire department to do. There are things that the chief hasn't actually been assigned to do in the past and could do that are essential towards making us the kind of department that we want to be. The hazard mitigation plan is due to be updated. And so there are a lot of things, as Kathy has suggested, to do. And I believe having this position to provide the leadership of the critical EMS effort is absolutely essential.
Thank you, Mike. I see that Leah has her hand up. Leah, did you want to speak to this?
I do. I don't know if I am, if it's an appropriate time, if I'm allowed to speak. Is this okay?
It's okay.
Can I make a comment? Okay. I just had an additional thought for consideration of the council in view of Rachel's thoughts and the duties. And I know that we've spoken previously, the council and myself, about the duties of the position. I've spoken to Saul about the duties of this position. But I'd like to entertain the possibility of that there is, or the consideration that there is, a joint obligation of duties for the EMS, because there is so much that needs to get done. I wonder, rather than taking it away from the duties of the chief and putting it onto the duties of the EMS coordinator, rather that there be it remain, some of those duties remain on the list of and the responsibility of the fire chief, and additionally other responsibilities of the EMS, and those duties are divided between the two and shared and done collectively. So things like the inventories of equipment supplies, which is ongoing and a big job, and maintaining the fire hall and drills, and responder retention and increasing responders. I just wonder if it's a consideration, rather than taking it off of one job description and putting onto the other, but rather you're dividing those duties. Just a thought.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And Kyle?
She kind of hit the nail on the head. Never mind. I was going to add to it, but she closed it at the end.
Okay. All right. Are we ready for the question? Madam Clerk?
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay, and now moving on to City Council reports. We have a number of reports. I think some of these items may have been, may not have any updates, any new information, but I'll run through them since they're on the list. Number 13, bike path update, SS4A grant. I believe, Jim, you said that we didn't receive the grant. Is there anything addition you wanted to add? I'm sorry, Kathy.
It's just been it was an exercise in frustration. And I wish, though, that the state may, you know, the state spends so much money on the airport and maintaining the highways. I wish they would get a little bit interested in pedestrians and bicyclists and maybe take the initiative here. But it would make the state a whole lot safer place. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
Just that I haven't sent the email yet. We can do a debriefing with the folks who scored the grant to see how we might do better next time. This was just a planning piece so that we could then apply with a plan for a project. It's been suggested we might have some alternative avenues for that, but doing the debriefing with the folks who helped us out would be a start in the right direction to see if we want to continue elsewhere with another planning piece or a project piece.
Okay, thank you.
And those are opening mm-hmm. up again. They'll be open up again in another 6 months to reapply.
Okay, thank you. And then item 14, a beach wheelchair update. Janine, did you have anything you wanted to add that we hadn't heard?
I think I said it at the prior meeting, and so I have continued to reach out to some of the places and get very positive feedback of users of the debug chair. But I've also looked at another source, and the quote of that is fairly similar, a little bit higher, though, than the debug one. I know that Mike took a look at the trail area and has thought that it's definitely something that wheelchairs would potentially be able to navigate. And I'd like to be able to have more input from the community on this, which I'll be following up on in the next couple of months.
All right. Thank you, Janine. Number 15, Mike, did you want to talk about the Salmon River Playground grand opening?
Sure. And thanks to our city clerk, Liesl, for working with Karen McSpadden and Jesse Soder at the school to develop a plan for a grand opening for the playground equipment. We think it's going to be fun to do with the kids who proposed this project. They brought it to us, and I want them to share in the pride that we all have in them for participating in our local government to get something done that will benefit children in the community. And so we have a ribbon cutting. Well, to begin with, the main part of the project, the installation of all the equipment, is done thanks to a great job by Chuck Schroth as our contractor. Kids, of course, have been playing on it, and I've had parents report to me that their kids have enjoyed the equipment already. We'll have a ribbon cutting on Saturday, January 20, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. The clerk has generated a very nice poster to announce it. And notes on the bottom, we'll be celebrating with hot chocolate and a campfire, which will probably be very nice on this cold January weather. I'd mention too that, of course, we got a very nice grant for this. So that offsets some of the of the cost of the project. And we are, I've asked the contractor for a quotation to build a wheelchair accessible route to it. Some of the equipment is accessible for handicapped children, and it would also provide a place for adults to walk along, maybe a bench or two along there to sit and watch their kids play. So we may have a little addition to the project, but we need to get a price and a plan from the contractor before we move forward. We do have a little money left in the projects.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Okay.
And then the next, the next item is number 16, Coffee with Council update. Council members Kyle and Rachel, would you like to tell us about this?
Yeah. Recently, Kyle got the flyer written up, and we have a date set, a time, a place, and a date. So it's really happening. The flyer will start going out in rotation tomorrow. And currently, it is Saturday the 27th at the Fireweed Gallery, and that's going to be 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. With Kyle Bishop and me hosting. And it's just an overview of what we are hoping to accomplish, is just more of a back and forth line of communication with the council and the general public. So please, if anyone's still here listening, please stop by, tell friends. We hope to see you there.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Have we addressed an issue of if other council members show up, do we have an issue with the Open Meetings Act? Do we need to post this as a potential meeting?
We have talked about this in the past, and that's why we have set it to only two council members hosting. So we're hoping to kind of schedule amongst ourselves. If someone is wanting to pop in, another council member could pop in, they can do so. Just probably talk amongst yourselves and make sure you're not going to be popping at the same time somebody else is going to be popping in, so we don't violate that open meetings and have to then modify or cancel this entire event. So I think we all just kind of are aware of where each other are and the time, and yeah, because we'll be taking, very detailed notes and bringing it back to the council during the work session, so no one will be missing anything, that's for sure.
All right, thank you.
And for those who do not know, the Open Meetings Act is not in violation until we have four council members there. That's why that third person, it's kind of a freebie that if they happen to show up, it's okay.
Yeah, there is a caution on this, and that if people showed up sequentially, as you suggested, it would still be a meeting. So probably unless we post it, which we can do, you can just post 5 days in advance and say that council members may be there, and then that covers it. But it's sort of like a chain of emails. Even if they're not there all at the same time, if four or more of us showed up during the hour or something sequentially, it could be a problem. But that's sort of a technicality. I'm sure nobody's really going to complain about it. But
so that's part of why we are advertising it and posting it, is for that reason. But if I understand correctly, the only thing that would violate us is recording it. Are we required to record it? So then, as long as we post it, then we're good. Yeah,
we can do a deeper dive on that, and I can be in contact. I think the way I see it, with the way Rachel and Kyle first presented it, is it was really try to only have those two council members. If you really want to be part of it, please sign up to be the hosting council member the next time and just not show up. And I think it was more of a buffer for if you decide to walk in and have coffee, we're not in violation now. Or if it's held at the library and you show up to return a book, it's not a problem. I don't think it was meant to be set up to have that chain effect, but that is something we can definitely look into the details of it and go from there, because there are some other stipulations that will come with it if we make it a meeting.
Thank you. Good.
And really, it's just us and Jim that's here. We have a couple of council members out of town too, so it would really just be like the three of you coordinating it.
Okay, thank you. Yes, go ahead, Janine.
Yes, I think it's great to be able to get as much involvement from the community as possible. And one of the things that I would like to perhaps get from people in the community is how is it that they would like us to communicate to them? Because I go along with what Liesl said, and one of her goals was to be able to get more information from the city to get that information out to the public. And I just am curious as to getting input back from people as to what type of a pathway they would like to see in order to become more aware of what the council's doing and what the city issues are. So I haven't seen your agenda of what you're planning to do, but that would be one question that I would be really curious to get feedback on.
Okay, Kyle?
So Janine, when Rachel and I met, we discussed a list of, you know, 7-8 questions that are sort of prompt questions that can guide discussion, and the means of communication is pretty high up on the list. So we're not necessarily going to focus entirely on that. We're going to let, you know, the people that we're there to hear from dictate that. But as conversations flow, emphasize that fact too, that we really want to know how we can better communicate with the public.
Thank you. And I'm glad to hear you're saying that you'll report back at the work sessions as to what you've learned from that.
Okay, Rachel?
And to add on, I did write up a summary of our discussion and our rough outline, and I can distribute that to everybody, just so everybody kind of knows what we're doing.
Thank you. I'd really be curious to see that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And this is moving in. There are number three, two issues in the mayor's report, 17, 18, and 19. I'm going to consolidate the Nature Conservancy and Hoonah Borough Formation into my report. Was thinking about, sort of the theme for this month has been conversations in the community. This month we've been engaged in community communications and conversations about land access and use in Juneau, in Gustavus. And I'm very proud to be a member of this community for many reasons, but especially for the intelligent, articulate, and compassionate dialogue the community has had about sensitive, difficult, and potentially divisive issues. The first one was the public access on the Hydro Road. I know I'm repeating some of what we discussed at the work session, but the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, is engaging in dispute resolution between the Olneys and AP&T regarding public access on the Hydro Road. FERC has welcomed the city's participation, and former city council mayors and Hydro Road hikers, Mike and Karen Taylor, Jim Muscoviac, and I met by Zoom with FERC mid-month. I sent a letter to FERC on December 12th, 2023. The correspondence for this and following issues will be posted on our website in the correspondence folder at www.gustavus-ak.gov/city-council. Second issue in Nature Conservancy lands. As we discussed at the work session on January 8th, the city learned at the end of December that the Hoonah Indian Association had sent a letter to the Nature Conservancy in November 2021 proposing transfer of the Gustavus Four Lands Preserve to HIA, and that TNC traveled to Hoonah in April 2023. Gustavus was not informed of the conversations, and a petition was circulated opposing the land transfer. In about 4 days, over 200 signatures were collected and 100 letters sent, and 75 people attended the council meeting by Zoom, not including those present in council chambers. Attending by Zoom were TNC Director Ivy Sponholz, Julia Knave, and Hank Lentfer. In response to the passionate and articulate concerns of the community, TNC is committed to retaining title to the preserve for the foreseeable future. See the city's correspondence file for emails from Director Sponholz and the city's January 15th response. Gustavus initiated preservation and has maintained stewardship of the Four Lands Preserve for a quarter of a century, and we are hopeful that we can rebuild our partnership with and trust in TNC. Please forward to the city any letters and emails you have sent to TNC so that we can have a complete record. Third item is the Hoonah Borough petition. The Hunanboro petition has been accepted by the local boundary commission and the public comment period will be open until February 29th. On Thursday, January 25th at 6 p.m., we will have an informational public meeting by the local boundary commission to describe how the petition review process. Questions are welcomed, but not comments. We'll be sending out information about how you can go about submitting public comments, and we're continuing to gather more information, as Kathy said, about the impact on businesses and other folks. So what else is happening? Saturday, January 20th at 11 a.m., the ribbon cutting ceremony for the new playground equipment at Salmon River Park. Saturday, the 27th from 10 to 11:30 at the Fireweed Coffee with the council. And on Monday, January 29th at 6 p.m., we'll have a capital improvement plan council work session. I was thinking about conversations and how when I first came to Gustavus, I was amazed at how people would just stop in the middle of the road and the dogs would lie down and people would just sit and talk. And everywhere you go, people are talking and talking. And it's amazing. It's such an important cultural aspect of our community. And I just want to thank Rachel and Kyle for holding their conversations with the community and bringing us all together back again. And that's all I have to say. Thank you, Gustavus. And if we are, oh yes, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead, sorry.
It's great that we've got our opportunity to hear from the local boundary commission on the Hunanboro formation. Do you have any plans for us to pass a resolution? The deadline is February 29, so I guess we would address it next month if we want to have a resolution with a...
Yes, and the time is pretty tight. So in addition to, you know, community members sending in their comments, we'll be undertaking that. It means, you know, it'll be a pretty quick turnaround, but I think by that time we will have hopefully developed enough concrete and concise information about the standards that they rely upon and how we feel that that may impact our community. So yes, we will be undertaking, at least that's what I would like to see happen.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Any more comments or questions? Well, thank you, everybody. And if nobody objects, we'll...
We have public comment on non-agenda items again.
Darn it.
I guess.
Whoa, that got away from me. Okay. Any city council questions and comments?
This is Jim Muscoviac. I have one comment, and I just want to say how impressed I am with the competence of our city staff, and we're very fortunate to have them.
Well, we certainly are. Thank you, Jim. We all agree on that. Looks like Brian has a comment.
Yeah, I wanted to just voice the results. I guess not really results, but I've as a result of the TSA and law enforcement issue that we've found at the airport, I've made a point of mentioning this in a lot of discussions with residents and have been surprised that in almost every single case, residents seem to be supportive of potentially having a law enforcement officer in the city. So maybe that's indicative of who I'm speaking with. But it felt like something that I should voice to the council just to make those comments from residents through me heard.
But perhaps that's something that could come up with the coffee with the council.
Yes, because on the opposite of that, everyone mm-hmm. I have spoken to is against having law enforcement.
Oh, that sounds like a Stavis. Okay. And let's see, what is the next one? Public comment. This is the second opportunity for members of the public to speak out on items, non-agenda items. Would anyone like to say anything at this point? I don't see any hands raised. And I think I get to say goodnight now. It's about 9 o'clock. Any objection to adjourning? Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Okay.
See you next time.
Yeah, thanks all. Good night.
Okay, adjourned at 9, exactly 9 on the nose p.m.